Conference of the United States Electronics Association, meeting here in Chicago, 2015. My name is John Klingo. I'm on the board of USPA, and welcome you. Before we begin, I just have a couple of announcements. Please, no taping or recording of anything in the presentation. Phones, iPads, etc. Also, be sure to be wearing your badge, conference badges, for the remainder of the conference, so that you can get entrance into the presentation rooms. Some reports that people have not been wearing anything, so people don't know whether it's part of the conference or not. Thank you for your cooperation on that. Okay, Matt. Now to begin for me, it's my real pleasure to introduce my friend Beverly Rubick, our next speaker. Beverly earned her PhD in biophysics at the University of California, Berkeley. She is internationally renowned for her research, the cutting edge of science and medicine, and has received several awards. Since 1996, she has been president, founder of the Institute of Frontier Science in Oakland, California, a nonprofit laboratory. She serves on the editorial boards of the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, Evidence-Based Integrative Medicine, and the Journal of Vortex Science and Technology. She's a professor of energy medicine at an Energy Medicine University, consultant on Maverick wellness products, and advises clients on enhanced self-care. Beverly's topic for today is biophotons, the light emitted by organisms in health and healing. Please give a warm welcome to Dr. Beverly Rubick.
Thank you very much, John. It's my pleasure to be here. I love this group. U.S. Psychotronics is like a homecoming for me. I've been in and out of this group for many years, and it's a delight to be back and see wonderful colleagues and friends from many years. So, and just to say it, Chicago is my hometown, although I left 40-something years ago and lived on both coasts since. It's really a pleasure to be back as well. There's nothing like the Midwest for friendliness and just a kind of wholesomeness that I haven't found anywhere else, actually. So I'm going to talk today initially about work that both Harry Jabs and my partner and I did. And there he is. And he's a physicist and engineer wizard who did a lot of the software, hardware for this project. So let me begin to talk just briefly about the biofield, which is one of my major ideas about what's happening in biology. As you may know, all the attention in conventional science is on the biomolecules. But what happens to your DNA or those biomolecules when you die? Does anybody know? At the moment of death or whenever, however you define death, DNA is intact. In fact, they're digging up DNA from woolly mammoths in Siberia, and maybe someday they'll be able to clone one or something, like the sci-fi movies tell us. But in any case, the DNA is intact when you die. What happens to your energy? It goes away. So I think that the energy, and I would imagine this group would agree, is much more pivotal than the biomolecules. And yet, it remains marginalized in academia. The concept of a life energy, the concept of any organizing field within living things is not recognized. But there are a small and growing number of us in science, Glenn Ryan is one, I'm another, who are working on this level. To elucidate the biofield. And I'm happy to say that I was part of a group at the National Institutes of Health back in 1992 that met and reviewed energy healing, and we realized that we needed terminology to explain this, but we didn't want to take some indigenous term or something that that was already thrown out of science, like the word life force. You know, that was it had its history in biology and had been thrown out. So we came up with the word biofield, and NIH bought it, and it became a medical subject heading in the National Library of Medicine. In days when you needed to really look in library indices, now with Google Scholar, you don't need it so much, but it was very important for us to bring in new words to describe energy healing, and so biofield therapies was one term to describe what energy healers do, laying out of hands, or even distant healing. And so the biofield, to define it simply, is the energy field containing information within and around the body, and also emanating from the body, as we're going to talk about today, the photons, the biophotons of light. I also think that it's an active organizing field of life. I think many of you would agree with that. You're working at that level with radionics, radiesthesia, and many other types of energy healing in this group. In 2002, I wrote a paper on this. If you're interested in this, you could email me, and I'll be happy to send it to you. You may be able to find it online. The biofield hypothesis, in which I elucidated it as an electromagnetic field. But I would say over the years, I certainly think it might be that and more, that it's not just electromagnetics. Or another way of looking at this is that electromagnetics is more complicated than we had thought and includes other things that possibly Maxwell alluded to, but that were removed in more modern physics textbooks over the years. And so the field is not just passive, but active and organizing and interacting with other beings' fields, so that there's biocommunication, transmission of information going on all the time between organisms and their environment and other critters out there. There's a long history of field concepts in biology. It goes back to ancient philosophies, especially from the East, with concepts such as qi and prana from ancient China and India, the concept of qi in Japanese philosophy and acupuncture. And we had, vitalism was part of science in the old days of biology, but it was thrown out when somebody could synthesize an organic chemical for the first time. That was sort of a death blow to vitalism in science. 1845 was the year. But we always had a theme of this, even in more modern science. The concept of the morphogenetic field in developmental biology was rich. Distinguished scientists such as Driesch and Gurvitch, around the turn of the last century, gave voice to the morphogenetic field that governed the development of organisms, that was at the root of development. But they never really knew what it was. They never elucidated it as electromagnetic, whatever. They just talked about it as a field of development. And the electrodynamic theory of Burr and Northrop was probably the first elucidation of a connection to electromagnetism in 1940 to 1960. But they brought this out in around the time when DNA was discovered, around 1950, and then all the attention went on the biomolecules for the last 50, 60 years, and away from field concepts of life. But there have been a few of us who have continued thinking about a biologic field. Marco Bishop, Fritz Popp, both in Germany, Glenn, who's here, Glenn Ryan, myself, Savely Sava, the late Savely, Bill Tiller, Roland Van Wyk in Holland, Zhang in China, and there are a handful of others and that continued this tradition of thinking, of doing research and theory in the field concepts of life, which really provides a scientific foundation for what is going on in the USPA, in psychotronics, etc., in really all of energy medicine. Now, fields are rather unique because they produce action over a distance. It is kind of a metaphysical concept to think about action at a distance, and it's certainly not a mechanistic thing where A and B line up, bounce around, bump into each other, and do something. So actually, in the history of physics, there were a couple of physicists who tried to remove the concept of field from science and to reformulate physics, but they were unable to do that. In other words, it's so fundamental to underlying mechanics and quantum theory, etc., we need the concepts of fields. So it doesn't seem to go away, and we're going to live with this concept of action across distance. The electromagnetic spectrum is shown here, and I'm going to be talking just about a narrow region here, the visible light, which we can see, but it spans from radio waves and weaker waves through the microwave, infrared, and this tiny spectrum of the visible to the ultraviolet and X-rays and gamma rays. So all of these are part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And as you see, the gamma rays have a much higher frequency than do radio waves and microwaves. And visible light is in the middle, interestingly, where we can see. If we look at deeply into physics and try to understand light, it's really enigmatic. There is no understanding of light. It has a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde character, sometimes acting like a particle, sometimes acting like a wave, depending on the experiment. It is an energy, a pure energy of the most pristine form that apparently does not need a medium. The concept of an ether through which light would travel was thrown out of physics, although some of us still have some ideas about a more subtle ether that might be required for light to travel. That's not part of conventional science. And it was present during the early formation of the cosmos. The Big Bang, or whatever you believe happened, was certainly let there be light. And it's also considered, at least by Einsteinian physics, to be the top speed limit in the universe. C is the speed of light, which is very, very fast, although again, that's being challenged by superluminal transit. It's a special speed in cosmology. It's a boundary condition. And maybe that's true between the worlds of more subtle realms and ours. But the true nature of light, it must be said, is unknown, just as matter is not really understood. And we have, of course, the concept of dark energy and dark matter, which is most of the universe, which we really don't understand. There's a long association between light and the sacred as the essence of vitality, an underlying unseen vibration or vibrance of life. It's a component in so many creation myths and virtually every religion on this planet. So it's been a symbol and manifestation of divine presence, and really appeals to me to look at the light emanating from life because of this association with the spiritual realm. So, of course, the light dispels the darkness, it illuminates, enlightens. The religious art of virtually every tradition shows people with halos around their heads depicting the sacredness of the saints. And there's the ordinary light that we see with the eye, but the inner spiritual light that we perceive with the soul, according to St. Augustine. And here's just some of that art. Giotto was a famous painter during the Renaissance and used perspective and started painting these halos. Well, actually, even before Giotto, the Middle Age art also showed that, the halos around the heads. And secular art does too. It depicts an energy field around the human being. And Eastern art as well, there we see it, as well as chakras. Now, just in case you're not familiar with the terminology, the word photon means the particle of light. That's light in its particulate form. That doesn't deny that it also operates like a wave. But in these experiments that I'm going to talk about, we're counting particles of light. The biophoton is a particle of light emitted by an organism. And when we use that term biophoton, it's not so conventional in science, although it's the subject of a fair amount of scientific research, but it implies that the photon is carrying information. And so it's the ultra-weak visible light between 400 and 700 nanometers in the visible light spectrum emitted by all living things, even bacteria, every living thing. Does it mean anything? What is it all about? There are different scientific views on this. The mainstream view is that it's only waste energy. It's hard to believe. Some organisms emit one-third of their metabolic energy as visible light. And the mainstream is saying it's waste. Well, what they're saying is that it's the byproduct of certain biochemical reactions that are produced by free radicals combining and that are luminescent, and that is just junk. I think that's very anthropomorphic to think that anything in the universe is garbage. So I can't say I agree with it, especially when it becomes such a tremendous part of metabolic energy. But I would say in the emerging worldview of biophysics, biophotons are bioinformational, perhaps bioregulatory, and used in biocommunication. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So first of all, there is bioluminescence. And about 30 years ago, I set up an exhibit like this at the Exploratorium in San Francisco, which is a museum of science and perception. And that was cultures of Photobacter, a light-emitting organism, bacteria. If you go to tropical seas and stir the ocean, you see this weak luminescence at night, and that's Photobacter in the sea, glowing. One-third of its metabolic energy is producing light. Do you think it's junk? Of course, the deep-sea creatures also emit light, and here we're writing on Petri dishes words with Photobacter and then incubating overnight, and we get luminescent words like neon signs in Petri dishes. So, Fritz Popp, a physicist in Germany, coined the term electromagnetic bioinformation and wrote a book by that title, published in 1989. And what he found about the photons coming from living things is that they had different decay properties. They had, without going in deeply into the physics, they showed a Poissonian decay, which is different from a Gaussian, which predicts from quantum theory that the light is coherent. That the light coming out of living things is more like a laser than an incoherent light bulb. That these sources of light are dissipative and not organized. The photons are coming at any in any phase whatsoever. They're not aligned. And so that the light of life was coherent was very special. And he went on to show that more incoherent light was coming out of sick people, people with cancer, people with chronic disease, looked more incoherent. Now, just to describe what coherence and incoherence look like, I think I have it on the next slide. So this is a heart tachygram. I'm plotting your heart rate versus time, and you can see that there's no particularly good pattern to this heart tachygram. This is the unregulated person who's thinking different thoughts and taking a sigh here and there, and that's how the tachygram typically looks. What happens when you practice an Eastern modality such as yoga, qigong, or meditation? This is the heart tachygram of a yogi who has been teaching for 16 years, Kripalu yoga, a very deep inner yoga. And there you see with every breath the heart is increasing and decreasing from 60 beats a minute to almost 90. That's enormous heart rate variability and this beautiful coherent wave of the heart. That's coherence. When the physiology is coherent, the waves emitted from the body are coherent, and that's real health and wellness. There have been previous studies on biophoton emission from people. All of the studies that I could find in the literature were from single individuals. They were measuring the hands, the head, various parts. Ours is different. We looked at the interaction between people. I think we've done the first studies on that to date. And if we go back to the metaphysics literature, this is Theosophy from Theosophy. This is what they saw intuitively, and it's so right. That's why I have to bring it in. So here is a minor chakra in the palm of the hand. And as it turns out, this point, the palace of work, as it's called in Chinese philosophy, is one of the highest emitters from the human body, the center of the palm, where the fingers meet right here. And also the tips of the fingers, where these whorls of energy are shown coming off. There's also a minor point on the wrist. But fascinating that before any of this was really measured, they saw this, and it is so true when we measure people. I had a graduate student, Eugene Wallace, who did a dissertation where he took ordinary folks, not energy healers, and he had them put their hand in a box under two conditions. One, when they did mental arithmetic, and he was counting the photons from the palm of the hand, the biophotons. And then when they were thinking about a sick pet, for example, if they had a cat and it was a sick pet, and sending the animal energy right from right here. And then he counted the photons under the two conditions and found when they intended to emit energy or try to heal the sick animal, they increased their light emission by factors of hundreds to thousands from the palm. That was a rather significant finding. Motoyama in Japan also measured meditators from the crown of the head and the palm of the hand, and also found that during meditation, energetics went up factors of hundreds to thousands. But this light is extremely low level. It's literally counting photons. It's you know, on the order of 20 to 50 photons per second per square centimeter. That's really low level. It's quantum. So this is the apparatus that Harry Jabs built. It's 4x4x8 foot plywood with a door on it, and then he's got some equipment here. I've got some other views of that. Here's the interior. Here we have three stools because we're looking at two people interacting, and I, one of the experimenters, go in and move the probe around that counts photons. The thing is painted black because we don't want stray light bouncing around and being recounted. And we have here a dental lab apparatus that Harry cleverly repurposed with the detector, which is here, held by some blue rubber bands, a photo tube. And this can be moved around. It is virtual infinite degrees of freedom to move around, and so we can put it at any body point. So there's the close-up of the detector. On the dental lamp has been removed, but there's the detector held in place and the cords and the electronics taken out. There's a en face view of the detector with a cap on it and a little LED that was not very bright, but we saw how really sensitive this thing was and measured the dark count too, as you'll see. So the name of the detector, is called Hamamatsu Photomultiplier Tube, and this is the number on it if you ever wanted to do this yourself. It's a very sensitive tube, does not need to be cooled, which is very important. There's a low dark count. Most of them need cooling. This is just a mock exercise to show you how we used it. Of course, it was under dark conditions. The door was closed. The people were in total blackness, and we had to feel our way around. But for example, if we're going to measure the Anju or the third eye, we would put the detector right there. And we also have to wear black when we go in there, again, to prevent stray light from complicating it. So we bring in our Qigong masters and our healers, another mock photo just to show you. Here we're measuring the palm. These are stages to show you how we did the measurements. So there's Harry at the control box with all the circuitry involved. And we also had to develop a fan and ventilation, because when you close a closet, you've got three people inside, and it's light tight, it's also airtight. So he had to quickly put ventilation in and keep the fans quiet, so air in, air out, and so we could breathe, because we're in there for some time. So there he is at the control, and you can see some data. So first we ran a dark count, and that means nobody's in the box. What does the tube show? So this is photon count rate, really measured in terms of voltage, and then the time in seconds. And this was 5 hours where the machine is just running, and you can see that it's really pretty flat. There's no extraordinary bumps in there, but there is some noise, and the dark count rate was 7 counts per second. That means 7 photons per second per square centimeter. So this was the research design for the first study. It's a quantitative outcome type study. We did not have a control group. We had 5 biofield practitioners, Reiki, Qigong, and original type energy healers who were on their own, doing their own thing. And pain patients, they were randomly assigned, so they never met one another. And they were measured in 8 different sessions. And they actually did the healing sessions in the chamber because we wanted to monitor the light during the healing and see what we measured. Nobody ever did that before. So the practitioner, the patient, and myself went in the box, and Harry remained outside of the box to monitor the controls and record the data. So here are the procedures. The practitioner and the patient arrived. They signed consent forms and demographic questionnaires so we knew more about them. Then the healer and patient go into the dark chamber with me, and the door is shut. Harry stays outside monitoring and collecting data. And I moved the detector around, and the detector was placed for 2 minutes on a body region where we counted photons, and then 2 minutes away, so we looked at baseline in case it had changed. That means we put it away from the body toward the ceiling or wall, the black thing, and that, therefore we could see if there was any shift in baseline. And then when they came out of the box later, we had them sign a post-questionnaire about satisfaction with the experiment, whether the pain patients felt any relief, so we knew if the healing had been successful. And inside the dark chamber, after the baseline was stabilized, Harry told us, okay, now begin, and then we took two-minute measurements for each bodily region, and I measured both the practitioner and the patient. I had to move the probe around. And then there was a 20-minute healing session done by the practitioners, and then once again I took two-minute measurements of the body regions of the subjects again followed by baseline. Then everybody came out of the chamber and completed their post questionnaires on relaxation, well-being, and satisfaction with the healing session.
Were your measurements on acupuncture points?
The only points we measured in this experiment were the palm of the hand and, in some cases, sword fingers. But I have some other experiments following this, so just wait and see. How am I doing for time? Okay, so just to describe our healers, we had five different healers, H1 through H5 here, from age 42 to age 78, both Caucasian and Chinese, who performed. Some were mixed modalities. They were all very experienced. I think it was between 10 and over 40 years of experience as energy healers. We have some very distinguished healers in the San Francisco Bay Area to bring to our laboratory. So Reiki, external Qi or Qigong, medical Qigong, and then mixed modalities whereby people had studied many things and then they developed their own way of treating. Who were some of our most outstanding healers, actually. I asked them whether they were right or left-handed because I was curious whether more energy would come out of the hand that was the dominant one, and I'll tell you the answer to that later. I asked them whether they thought that energy might be connected, that energy healing might be connected with light or not. Some said yes, maybe uncertain. And we also monitored heart rate variability, and here I looked at autonomic balance with low frequency divided by high frequency. If the value is between about 0.5 and 2.5, that's good autonomic balance. There's one that says a little excited here. And after the session, the score, I asked them to fill out a questionnaire. The Likert scale was from 0 to 10, how relaxed you feel about well-being and also satisfaction with the experiment. As you can see, the numbers are all pretty high, between 7 and 10, indicating that the experiment succeeded in terms of creating a healing context inside the box, because that's a rather unusual thing, to heal in a dark closet. So these are our patient demographics, between 61 and 72 years old, back pain or urethritis or thyroiditis. And again, they have pretty high scores about being satisfied with the session, feeling well and relaxed afterwards. So what did we find in the box? I'm going to take you through a few sessions and show you the raw data. So this is time, and this is the photon count. And so they're in the box, there's a baseline. Now we're measuring the healer palms, and you can see it's jumping up. And then in between the measurement of the palms are the intermediate baselines, because the baseline is coming down slightly, so that's an important thing to measure in between. And then we measure the patient palms, right and left, R and L. Then during the healing session, where I put the detector above everybody sitting there, by the way, I blackened myself out. I was black. You'll see a picture later. We found several big peaks for this session, but we found, as you'll see, every healing session was unique. What was interesting about this session, and I wish we'd had a tape recorder playing at the same time, is because when the healer was talking about the angelic realm or the energy coming and running well, then we got the bursts of light. And that was just so synchronous that we have to say that maybe really light, at least in the case of this healer, is definitely connected with energy healing. And then the session was over. This is 20 minutes. We measure the healer palms again, patient palms. And the baseline did change a little. And this is electronics baseline. So that's how it went with this particular session of patient and healer. What did another one look like? This one was very different. This was an older healer, and we also found out that older people tend to emit less light. So this was baseline coming down. I don't know why it's so high, but there we go. It's pretty steady here. Healer palms. The patient was a younger person, had more light coming out. During the healing session, we just had one big peak and then was relatively quiet in this session. And then healer palms again, which aren't significantly different, maybe a little lower, but you have to consider the entire distance from here to here, the baseline and up, and the patient palms. Another session with a different healer and patient. This was a Reiki practitioner. She was the youngest healer and also a very slight woman, very slender. And we had trouble finding any energy coming out of her palms in the resting state. It was interesting. It almost looked like noise. So in fact, after we measured her and then measured the patient, Harry told us to repeat the healer palms. He didn't tell us why, but we repeated it. And there you can see, it's very slight, but it's there. The healing session was pretty quiet. I can't say that there's anything significant emitted here with Reiki. And healer palms again, post-healing and patient palms. This was a Qigong master who also said he used sword fingers. What are sword fingers? It's the index and middle finger like this. And, you know, Qigong masters are often moving this around and sending energy. And so he said, would you kindly measure that, because that's really where I do my healing, and not so much from the palm. So here we go. Baseline comes down. We're measuring healer palms. But now we measured the sword fingers, which actually have more energy than the palms. And then we measured patient palms. And then the healing session was pretty quiet. It looks to me like this is just the falling of baseline. And in the end, healer palms, healer sword fingers, and patient palms. You can see that energetically, people are quieting down, actually, after energy healing. Another session, there's some noise here, disregard that. This is the dark count baseline. Then healer palms. Now healer sword fingers are even higher, and especially the right hand and not the left. And later I'll say something about that. Patient palms, and then the healing session again is quiet, and then afterwards, healer sword fingers. Everything seems a little quieter after the healing session. So these are the actual photon counts. Now we took that data in voltage and converted it to biophotons, and now plotted everything for the various sessions. So the body side, right and left, we're measuring palms, sword fingers, palms of patient, and then after healing, healer palms, healer sword fingers, and patient palms. What's interesting that I have in red here, that the sword fingers are the highest emitters, higher than the palms, at least of this Qigong master. Healer palms, on the average, the right hand emits a little more than the left. That's true also of swords and patient palms. And that's true whether you're right or left-handed. And that's consistent with Oriental medicine theory, that right is yang and left is yin. And that the right is going to be emitting more energy, is predicted by Oriental medicine theory. Post-healing, on the average, healer palms were also diminished, as were patient palms and swords. So everything went down after healing. And as you saw, the session of energy healing was distinctly different from session to session. Now, we only did about 8 sessions. I showed you about 5. But it seemed that everything had a different energy signature, just depended on the moment. That's the end of that study. Now, we went on to do a different study. And I'm mentioning names here because they allow us to. This is Dr. Jacqueline Chan, who's an osteopathic physician who does energy healing in Marin County near San Francisco. And we worked with 3 of her patients, and she came to our laboratory, and we measured the patients immediately before she did energy therapy and then immediately after. She didn't want to work in the dark box. She wanted to do her energy therapy where they were seated in the light so she could see what she was doing. And then we put the subjects back in the box and measured them. In this case, we measured the palm of the hand as well as the 3 dantians. The 3 dantians being, well, that would be basically the ajna center, the heart, and the hara. Those, in Oriental medicine, they don't use chakras so much. They use the dantians in Chinese medicine. So we're measuring these 3 regions in the palms. And first of all, this is before any energy treatment. This particular subject was pretty well balanced, the third eye, the heart, and the abdomen. The heart is really the apex of emission from the body trunk. And many traditions has been said, and also even in conventional science, the heart has the strongest magnetic field. It emits the most light, more than the brain area. And of course, the palm of the hand emits even more. This is very typical of somebody who's pretty well. So this was actually, according to Dr. Chan, her least sick patient out of these 3, and we got the most balanced looking profile, interestingly. This was the second subject, who had very low emitting dantians. In fact, hardly any light is coming out of the third eye, heart, or abdomen. We had a rather high baseline in this case. And the palms of the hands are emitting something. But we hardly saw anything out of the dantians. And the third patient was an interesting case because she had a lot of emission out of the third eye and little emission out of the heart and abdomen. It turns out this particular person is also a medical intuitive. She's been trained in it, and that's what she does for a living. And she can control opening and closing the third eye. And guess what we saw? We saw a change, a dramatic change in light when she did this. So this is the third eye under so-called closed conditions, according to her. And the third eye, when open, was distinctly different. And I would say we're accurate to about plus or minus one photon. We have that level of accuracy and reproducibility. So going from, say, 34, 35 to 51 is pretty amazing. And to see that level of photons coming out of the body, not the hand, is also pretty awesome. This is Christine. She's the medical intuitive. She doesn't mind me using her name, by the way. Checked it out. And that's how I have to look in the box. It looks like Darth Vader, I know. I don't want to confound the experiment with my light, so I have to blacken myself. I've got black gloves, black clothes, and I guess my neck and eyeballs are the only contributors to any photons in the box. There we are coming out of the box. So what happened after healing? Just as we saw with the previous experiment where people went in the box and after healing, photons were quieter, we found essentially that. The photons quieted, less photons post-healing for the first subject who was already pretty well balanced. The second subject, though, who was very diminished, actually, we boosted the energy treatment by Dr. Chan boosted their photon emission a little bit, especially from the dantians, where she was very, very weak. So we see enhanced emission, which is a good sign that energetically she was boosted. And the third subject, we found actually energetically she went down. And I think her situation was confounded by her being a medical intuitive and able to open and close her chakras so readily. So just to summarize, you know, are biophotons really involved in energy healing? Study 1 showed some unique time changes in biophoton emission during the energy therapy sessions in a dark chamber. I think the answer to that question is maybe we saw some correlations, but of course I'm a careful scientist and I'm not going to draw strong conclusions based on a few subjects and little data. But it looks promising. It looks like something we should follow up on and study other energy sessions. Clearly, there's energetic signatures that every individual has. And we found in the second study a greater balance, especially in the case of extreme weak person that did not have much energy in the dantians. We found greater balance following energy therapy. So it looks like there are possible energetic signatures that individuals have, that some people have the ability to open and close this, and we see a different photon flux, and that with every energy healing, we see a unique situation here. And that doesn't surprise me, those results. Alternative complementary medicine is a highly individual experience. There's a therapeutic partnership that it involves, and it's a wholly unique moment, and you can't expect to replicate it from one to another. Now I'm going to go on and talk about other experiments, and at the end I'll take questions. I'll stay around. So we also did some experiments in agriculture. We worked with a group that had an idea that their form of agriculture went beyond organic because they didn't use any manure. They only used plant matter to make compost. I'm not going to show you the results of that. It was rather complex. But we did cucumber study, and we compared conventionally grown and organically grown cucumbers. And I think the biophoton counting has enormous capacity to study the freshness and the vitality of foods. I'll tell you why, because I spent time in Fritz Popp's lab back in 1992, and I'll never forget, there was a woman who came in one day with sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, and she said, some of these are organic and some are conventionally grown. I'd like to see if you can tell the difference between them. And we measured them, and we could. And the organic one was a higher emitter in that case. But with the cucumbers, we didn't find that, and I want to show you the experiment. So I grow cucumbers, and we grew organic cucumbers from seeds provided by this group, in fact. The research question, is there a difference in biophoton emission between organically grown and conventionally grown cucumbers? And we couldn't find the same type of cucumber in the store. We went to Safeway and got some cucumbers. My cucumbers were of the Japanese variety, and the other cucumbers were of the American variety, the big ones that are, you know, kind of rubbery and tasteless, as we found later on, indeed tasteless. But the organic cucumber actually had a lower biophoton emission than the conventional. And there was something else that happened. We put the conventional cucumbers in the box, and they emitted an enormous amount of light, which then decayed. I think actually they were sprayed or chemically treated, and the chemicals were interacting with room light and making a phosphorescence that then decayed. We had to keep them in the box for a while, and then they emitted something. But they had a wide range of emission. And so I don't think we can trust the produce in there. So that study was confounded because we had different types of cucumbers, because the cucumbers were probably different ages. I just picked mine fresh that morning. The stuff sitting at the supermarket, you don't know how old it is. There's no way to know. Even at a farmer's market, you don't really know. So I would need to grow them myself by both methods, and even from the same seed stock, etc., to really do the experiment correctly. So conclude from these experiments, we found distinct differences in the counts of biophotons for different persons that may relate to health status and conscious intention to move energy, such as people do with intuitive, bringing energy to the third eye. Biophoton emission of healers and patients showed a slight decline after energy healing. Not sure why, but that's what we found. Biophoton emission of patients Dantians showed greater balance immediately following energy therapy from a practitioner. And we also found that the healthier person, as evaluated by the physician, also showed greater balance among the Dantians. And that organically grown cucumbers emitted less light than conventionally grown ones, but as I said, age, the species, and the possible chemical sprays on conventional ones were not controlled for in our study. It was just an attempt to look, a preliminary study to take a look. But I think it's a very promising method to compare and look at the vitality of our food. So what can we say about these experiments? Biofield therapy sessions each showed unique biophoton emission patterns, but we were limited by a single detector in these experiments. What we are setting up for in the future are having two detectors, two identical photomultiplier tubes, place one on the body of the healer, one on the body of the patient, or one on the body of lover number one and one on the body of lover number two, and look at the energy of interaction. Look at the energy of love, of relationship, and do simultaneous measurements and what we call cross correlations between the photon emissions. That's the better way to do these experiments. So we haven't published this data. It's preliminary, and we learned a lot, and now we have to move our apparatus to the next phase. And that's how science works. You don't get a definitive answer on day one doing experiments. You need to refine and move forward. For agriculture, clearly we need to know the details of what are the growth conditions, the history of the vegetables, the age, when they were picked, how they were, whether they were sprayed or not. All of those things are very important into interpreting biophoton data. And now I have another subject to talk about. Slightly different from counting biophotons is using the technique of digital Curlian photography to get induced light emission from, say, the fingertips or from water, etc., to look at an energetic signature from people or objects. The digital Curlian, or electrophotography as it's sometimes called, was invented by Dr. Konstantin Kuratkov from Russia. It was about 1997 when I learned about his work, and I brought him to San Francisco to give the first workshop in the U.S., and people were excited. Curlian photography had been around. One used film. It was very laborious. There are many conditions, but the idea of doing it digitally and then doing software analysis was very novel about 20 years ago. And he developed something called the gas discharge visualization technique and camera by the same name, which I used for a long time. And really interesting software that gives good clinical and research reports that can be analyzed quantitatively. So schematically, the person is putting their hand, let's say for the human measurement, they put their hand in a dark chamber and they touch with finger by finger an electrified plate. This plate is somewhere between 5,000 and 12,000 volts DC, and there's then an emission from a corona discharge. It's at a lower level than conventional Curlian because the person does not feel a buzz. You put your hand on Curlian plate, you feel a little electricity going through. But with the digital format, there's very few people who feel it. And then the glow happens because there's gas discharge around the finger, from the moisture around the finger, from the finger, and a glow of electrons that are released that are then excited and then settle back and make light. So it's an induced light emission. That's different from the counting of photons without any voltage added to the body. So the experiments I just spoke about earlier were innate biophotons. This is, I would not call this biophotons, but induced light emission. It's a corona discharge, looking at the sparks coming out of the fingers. So what do you get? You get patterns like this. And I did a lot of studies in the past using the DDV camera where we compared energy healers in the resting state when they're not trying to send energy and when they're sending energy. And you can see from where you are, this is brighter. It has a different quality. This is sparkier, more discrete sparks coming out. And this finger has more regular, smoother patterns of emission. We would say less fractality, in fact, as the software would reveal. But today there's a new device. I just wanted to describe it and talk about one little study that I did. It's called BioWell, and it's by the same inventor. So he's miniaturized it, and here it is right here. It's portable. It's operated by the USB port on a computer, so you can take it into the field and measure, for example, the effects of being in a sacred site, the effects of being out in nature. And it has even better software because he's got 20 years of experience with the software from the GDV. So he also has an add-on. This is called the Sputnik. It looks like a little Sputnik, remember, that went into space. It was in the 50s. I was a little girl when that happened. What is this? It's a Tesla-like antenna that's monitoring the environment, hooked into the BioWell, and I've done a couple of experiments only, and I also did one with Konstantin Korotkov too. He had this set up, and he had all of us around, and he started to tell jokes. And when he told a very psycho-spiritually uplifting joke, the energy of the group went up. And then he told a joke that was a little bit, I would say, putting down a certain psychosocial group, you know, racially improper. Or, the energy went down, and just to demonstrate the effect. I did an experiment with a group in Berkeley run by Sperry Andrews who are interested in trying to get to a collective consciousness by eye-gazing into one another and doing a series of exercises. And this, the energy of this Sputnik started out pretty dancing and pretty high for the group who knew one another. And then as they got deeper into the exercise of trying to create a cosmic consciousness, getting down to that ground state of being, the energy slid down and was very, very stable at a ground state. And that was very actually appealing to them because they were looking for that in their exercises. So collective consciousness state. So that's the Sputnik attachment. There are other attachments coming for studying water, for studying materials. We expect the water device to come out in August. So it's exciting. But I wanted to just show you some BioWare results so you get an idea of what this shows. I recently did a study on cell phone radiation. That's a whole other subject. But just briefly, to tell you the results, I looked at people between age 27 and 75, and I was looking at the blood in particular using dark field live blood analysis. In a nutshell, what I found is that the blood is very disturbed when you even wear a cell phone, and this was a smartphone, in a backpack. Turned on, ready to receive a call, readiness mode. Even that caused sticky blood But furthermore, that holding the phone and using it, as most people do, in one hand and pecking away with the other finger, for 45 minutes cause even more serious blood changes of spiky red blood cells called echinocytes, which really are disturbed. And I won't go into those details, but I just want to show you the biofield results for one subject. So the software, based on 10-finger data, calculates an overall biofield for the body. How does it do this? Well, the hand is a homunculus, a dwarf representation of the human body. And there are patterns of energy coming out of the hand. For example, in Korean hand acupuncture, this is the head, these are the arms and the legs, like a little animal. And then there's Sujok, where this is the head, these are the arms, and this is the legs. So there's different systems. And there's also a large body of empirical data from Russia, looking at many thousands of people. So they correlated when 2 o'clock and this finger is off, then they have a bad thyroid, for example. So they mapped it, and this calculated or composite biofield is made from all 10 fingers. But more deeply, you can't see this, I'm sorry, these are the various organs and tissues, and this is the distribution of energy in those tissues on the left-hand side of the body and on the right, made from the left hand and right hand. And then this is before using the cell phone, and this is after using the cell phone. And this person held the phone in the left hand and worked with the right hand. So you can see just offhand, before using the cell phone and after, the left hand energy was more disturbed. There are many great peaks, and there's a greater imbalance between left and right following use of the phone. That's an example of what we saw in terms of the disturbance in the biofield. Her stress level wasn't particularly changed, nor was her overall energy level, but the right-left balance went from 97.54%, which was very good, to a low level of balance, 85.36%. So that using an electronic device and holding it is disruptive to the energy field. And this is just an example. I have N equal 10. I haven't published this data yet, but just to show you what the effects were. Another part of the software is a chakra analysis, and this is the same person, the 7 chakras at baseline. Many of them are aligned well. When they're on the right side, as we perceive it, that means more introversion in the person or in the condition of the person. When they're on the other side, it's more extroverted, more active. So, for example, if somebody has... there was a case of a 16-year-old who was very depressed and withdrawn and didn't feel loved. She had a very tiny green circle way out here. She was withdrawn, she was introverted, and her heart chakra was very puny, is what that means. So it has to do with right-left balance, but also it has a meaning in the software. So the balance was more disturbed after cell phone use, particularly in the lower chakras. But now most people aren't holding the phone to their ear anymore. They're using it here with the speakerphone. And in my study, they only had 5 minutes to the head, and they used it as a speakerphone in the hand. So you can see the chakras are more disturbed after phone use. And that was pretty true across the board. So I'd like to acknowledge my partner, Harry Jams, who made it possible for this biophoton research, really. He was the engineer and brilliant mind behind making it all happen, and then collaborator in doing the study on biophotons. The Global Gateway Foundation funded the biophoton study, and the Weston A. Price Foundation funded the blood part of the cell phone study, which is published in their journal if you want to read it. It's online, freely available. And there's our email addresses if you want to contact us. For anybody who'd like to stay, or I have some time, right? It's not quite.
Yeah.
I have some time, and I'm happy to run the BioWell to show you an example if someone would like to volunteer. Okay, come on up. And actually move this computer, because I'll have them sit there or stand there. I don't want anybody sitting on that computer accidentally.
Do you want me to take anything off?
No, I think you have no hand jewelry or watches, so that's good.
Scalar, okay.
Oh, you have a scalar wave thing on? Yeah, I would take it off.
And these are
So I've opened the software. The software is an online-based software that one subscribes to, and they're always updating it as they add new devices, etc. And it's $20 a month. It's really phenomenal. So I've opened it. I'm going to just put your name. Your first name is?
Martha.
Martha C. And then I need your birthday, starting with the day.
06.
The month?
02.
And the year?
1955. Gotta keep going.
I know. Oh, I went over shot.
There we go.
Okay, I could add more information, but I'm just going to do that. And I hit OK. OK. Now, ideally, you would stand up. I don't know how you feel if you're too short or tall to stick your finger in one by one. Can you stand up and do this?
Sure.
All right, does that feel awkward?
No.
OK, so the first thing you have to stick in is the right thumb. And you're going to feel for, there's a glass plate on an angle like this, and I want you to hold your thumb in there. It'll be on a little angle. Do you feel it?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm going to scan. And it says, please wait. In a moment, I'll have a picture of her thumb energy. There it is. And the green check mark means it's good. Go on to the index finger of the right hand. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're doing the index finger, and there you go. The third finger. Oops. Now, with the third finger, there was a little glitch, and it gave me an exclamation mark. We have to go back. My suggestion is move it down a little bit. What I didn't bring with was a dark cloth. Sometimes, you know, your fingers get thinner as you get down to the pinky, and then light leak is happening. So normally I'd just put a dark velvet around the person's arm, but I didn't bring it. So let's see if we can get this. Okay. Go on to the fourth finger. Okay, and now the pinky. The pinky may be the hardest because it's so little. You there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, now do the other hand. Same way. Start with the thumb. Well, I don't see it. Oh, there it is. Okay, index. Good. Third. Okay, four. Okay, and the pinky. Almost all. Okay. Oops, didn't like that. I'll just redo the pinky. Hold it steady and pull it down a little bit. See, it's cut off at the top. Okay, now I'm going to press one button and analyze. How simple is that?
I'll sit again.
Yeah, sit down. Okay, it even gives the energy in joules. It's really looking now at induced light emission. Joules is a standard unit in physics. It's rather little, and I don't know why the people are missing here the colors. This is the left, middle, and right, but it's not showing you the contours of the torso. But let me just move along. Here are the chakras. Everything is in good alignment and good size, except the third. Whatever. A little bit on the fifth. And they're more on the introverted side, withdrawn from. And the stress level is normal, on the calm side of normal. Energetically, you're normal. And the balance is a little bit low. That has to do with your left-right balance. I think there was more energy on the left side than the right, from what I saw. Oh, unfortunately, I don't know why this is not all coming out here. There's a distribution in the organs, etc., but it's not showing. It's how that light box deals with my computer screen, and also the energy reserves. I'm sorry about that. What else can we see here? There's a report. Maybe it'll show up there. There's a nice PDF report. that shows all of this, and maybe it'll show what I couldn't see on my thing. Yeah, it still is, the screen doesn't show. It's unfortunate. It's all too small to see. I'm sorry. But anyway, the distribution of the various organs and tissues and the energy reserves are shown here in the software. And explanations are in the report, and recommendations for changing the energy. So here, this shows something. The green is normal average. What looks brown up there is actually a little bit low. It's a totally different color here. My. And, okay, so head is basically normal, but eyes, ears, nose, and jaw were a little bit low. Heart, cerebral zone, coronary vessels a little bit low. The epiphysis is the pineal gland, and the hypophysis is the pituitary gland. So pineal is low. I think the pineal is very stressed in summer. I've noticed this measuring the GDV for many years. There's so much light. We don't get enough darkness for the pineal. So in summer, the pineal is stressed. And in winter, it feels good. So all of those values then look pretty normal in the endocrine system except for pineal. The musculoskeletal system, by the way, they're actually numerical values. This report, there's a different report that gives all the numbers. So I'm just going through the so-called patient report, which doesn't give all the numbers and scare people. So the thorax is showing a little bit under low energy up here in this area. Also descending colon. This could relate to when you ate last. The rectum is in excess, and lots of people have that. It may refer to even internal hemorrhoids that you may or may not know about, or just a stretched out area from lack of fiber. Okay, so there's various things in the intestine that look like low energy for a while, the colon, etc. The gallbladder also in the appendix, low energy. Then we get into the urogenital system, looks a little excess. The kidneys look normal. One of the things I've noticed taking this over, working for about 20 years with the GDV and looking at people, is that the respiratory system has really changed over the years. How? Well, it looks terribly inflamed in virtually everybody who comes in. And I think that is due to increasing chemtrails, the increasing aluminum, barium, and all the other things that they're spraying in the so-called geoengineering program, which I have my questions about. In any case, everyone now has tremendous stress in the respiratory system as a result, I think, of that, because 20 years ago it was much less, and now everybody is showing stress in that area. So then it goes on to tell you what to pay attention to in terms of certain tissues and organs. And then it goes into the chakras. And there they were. And the third one was the most excessively out of balance. So the balance was lowest on the third and also on the fifth a little bit. And again, there are numerical values in other aspects. And it goes in to describe what that is and what it all means. And then finally it gives you biorhythms. The reason the biorhythms are not based on any energetic analysis. They're based on your birth date. The reason he throws this in the software is that it's very important to know at which phase in this cycle you did these measurements. There are times when all three, physical, spiritual, and mental, emotional, come together at a lower high point. And if you were to measure someone then, you'd get something rather anomalous that is not the typical picture of them. And so then you look and see what's today. It's July 18th, and we're at a point that's not particularly extreme for this person. So that's good. So this would be a measurement that would have some meaning. And the way we use this is that we would follow someone over time and get to know their energetic signature. There will be somewhat of a dance around that, you know, that you're never quite normal, but you dance around your own normal. So you get to know what your own normal is, and then when you get sick or if something chronic is going on, we can see it. But I have to say that we can pick up things that You know, people say, how can you see through my fingertip energy that I have diabetes? Because the pancreas show an inflammation. And there, people can be quite skeptical, and then we can see a result. It was in year, what was it? Year 2000, I was on Good Morning America with the GDV camera. I was called in live because the science editor at ABC came to see me, and we did his GDV, and I found that he had a low thyroid, even though he told me he took thyroid hormone, and he had an inflammation on one side of the groin. I said, I don't know what that is. He said, I can't believe it. I have a low thyroid. I take this drug, and I had hernia surgery 2 weeks ago, and I still have pain over there, and the GDV picked it up. So I went to the show, Good Morning America, did it live on the air, and saw people who needed a bypass, and they said, you know what? I've got a bypass scheduled, a coronary bypass, next month. It's amazing what it can show. And it really shows that there's evidence for a biologic field that is informational, that gives deep information that can be quantified with ordinary scientific type equipment. And yet, where is this in our scientific and medical systems? It remains marginalized in the realm of alternative or complementary. This device is not medical, because to become a medical device in the United States would cost many millions of dollars. So it's strictly outside of medicine. It's strictly for research, education, purposes only. And yet, I think it has very useful information for health and wellness. And so, yet we'll never see it enter that sphere because of the formidable challenge to find the funding that would pay for all those three phases of clinical trials and the large numbers of people that would have to be studied. So this is the huge barrier then for energy medicine to traverse, to ever become mainstream, given the current system. We can only hope that the conventional medical system will break down quickly. First of all, because it's very ineffective against the biggest health problems in our culture, which is chronic. It's very ineffective. And so we can only hope that it breaks down, that people see the light and realize that they're feeling sicker and sicker from taking all of those drugs and from having all of those procedures, and that they come marching with their feet and pocketbooks to those of us who are practitioners in this, who will give them back their health, and that this will be the future of medicine. Because wherever there's a frequency where we can interact with the body's biofield, we can make a deep and nourishing change in the field. Besides diagnosing or taking a look, as I've shown here, there's ways of using these fields therapeutically, making change at a very deep level without the side effects, because there are no metabolites of drugs to deal with. You simply process the information and change happens at the deep level. So that's the power of what we're all doing here. It's enormous. As enormous challenge to the mainstream, and of course there's tremendous resistance, it's highly political, it's all about money and power, and that's what we're up against. So I hope I've given you a taste of what happens at my laboratory. We're quite dedicated to measuring the biofield in many ways and trying to understand a scientific foundation for energy medicine and all of its varieties. It's really an enormous body of wisdom, comes from the indigenous realm as well as modern times, that needs to move forward to become the number one system of diagnosis and therapy. And then pharmaceutical drugs will take its place as second fiddle to energy medicine, I think, in the future. So if anybody's interested in a BioWell, I'm an international distributor. I'm also a holistic health practitioner in the San Francisco Bay Area, where you can come and explore your health and wellness. Thank you very much. So, yeah.
So I agree with you that there's no correlation between Kirlian photography and biophoton emission, but I just wanted to say that I did some Kirlian photographs of tumor cells and normal adjacent biopsy tissues from patients once, and I observed that, unlike what I expected, tumor cells have more and larger Kerlian corona discharges. And you're observing that's like a disease. And you're observing in healing practitioners, there seems to be less energy coming out of a practitioner. So there may be a correlation there. So the question is, when Pop did his original work, when he worked with diseased microorganisms, was there also more energy?
Well, I want to say, let me distinguish the Kerlian from the biophoton, because I think it's quite different. What I have seen in the Kerlian is, what does a healer, what does a Qigong master or a yogi look like with, say, the biowell? It's not about how big your energy is. It's all about the smooth, unimpeded flow of qi. It's about how perfect a circle of light is each finger making. I have looked at Qigong masters extraordinaire from all over the world, because they come to this great conference we have in San Francisco that Dr. Effie Chow runs. They're some of the best. They do amazing stunts and they have enormous healing abilities. And I have not seen big energy fields so much as perfect circles of light. They're tremendously balanced. And they can move energy dramatically. The guy that pulls a truck with his male genitals, for example, how does he do that? I don't know. But after, just before he does it, he has an enormous field in his lower dantian. And after he does this stunt of pulling a truck, and he's been on National Geographic television with that stunt, his second chakra, second dantian shrinks to almost nothing. I mean, okay, so he's got enormous potential to move energy, and he teaches this. It's called Power 99 Qigong. You can look him up. Master 2, T-U. Okay, so what you find in the healers is that they look incredibly balanced. It can be very subtle, but the circle of light coming out of their fingers is not sparky. It's like smooth white light, perfect circles in the digital Kerlian. And when people are sick, first of all, they may show inflammation. The body's trying to get energy flowing. But then in the case of chronic disease, the field really shrinks. Whether it's depression, cancer, etc. I just reviewed a paper that Konstantin Kurotkov and his group did in Russia. And it will come out soon because it was just accepted. I got the email notice. And it's about literally diagnosing colon cancer using this camera. And they showed with a group who already had colon cancer, already medically diagnosed, and then a normal population matched age, gender, etc. They could see the difference. So there you go.
Well, I was actually measuring the tumor itself, not the person.
Yeah.
In my experiment. So that may be different.
Well, it may be different, you know. And there's just so many nuances here. But I think chronically ill looks very low. Acute fighting or chronic and fighting your disease, you look inflamed. You know, your body's sending energy, trying to deal with it. There's an excess energy. But in that study with Dr. Chan, the one person who had almost no energy coming out of the chakras, and one chakra was even below ambient. We said, what the heck is going on here? How can you have less light coming out than the background? And then we talked about it with Dr. Chan, and she said, you know what? It could be that it's sucking in energy from the ambient. And so it actually emits less because it's sucking up the ambient energy, the ambient chi, the universal cosmic chi, which is maybe what we measure in the baseline, in part. So that was a fascinating thought. So it's like a black hole, the dantian that was less than ambient. What a thought. So nature is trying to balance, and the energy goes where it needs to go, and that's the philosophy of all of this universal life energy. Yeah.
2 points. Give the slide on conclusions.
Yeah. Which one, though? The last slide?
That was the first slide. Maybe that's enumerated.
Okay. I may have closed it out.
You had a slide on the decreased emission after treatment by the healers. I want to suggest that that's adaptation, that our response to disease as a challenge or a stressor is adaptation.
Yes.
It's going to be a greater emission. Maybe that one person you referred to was calling it wasted energy. But in the more adapted state or the post-treatment state, be a lower emission because of adaptation. That's the response to the stress.
What we have found.
No, it's positive.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a very good point. What we have found is that people being in a completely lifetime chamber is such an unusual situation because we're practically never in a completely lifetime situation unless we go underground and turn all the lights off. That people go actually into a different state, and people. Beverly, you may say something to that. Where people actually, remember, they are in there for 45 minutes. So they go into a different state that is quite unusual for them. It's almost like a solitary confinement. And their systems are settling down. And we believe that the fact that we see less photo emission after the eating session may be confounded by this effect.
That second point was the slide where you were depicted in the chamber. You were masked to reduce photonic emission. Let's just read in Tom Vallone's bioelectric magnetic healing.
Mm-hmm.
And he identified four tissues that are the major emitters of biophotons. And one was corneal tissue.
The eye?
Yeah. So you need glasses.
Well, actually, yeah. Okay, I could blacken my eyes. Since the whole chamber is black, I can just wear a mask. I think, frankly, I was working in the box with eyes closed most of the time because when it's black and you can't see anything, you kind of rest your eyes by closing the lids. Like blind folks walk around like that often. But, I mean, how much light is really emitted from the cornea? I haven't seen that literature, but the biggest emitters are really sword fingers and palm. That's clearly in the literature on humans.
What portions of the cells are involved?
With the emission? I don't think that's well understood.
Is it like a cytochrome?
I don't know. Glenn? Did Glenn leave the room? He might know.
Give you an indication of the numbers. At this ambient light, we get about 10 to the 17 photons per second per square centimeter. You saw that the actual photon counts that we had were below 100 counts per second per square centimeter. Another good number is you saw the little LED that I had there for calibration purposes. The LED was pointing away from the detector. The detector was here. So I, from the outside, I could turn the LED on ever so slightly. And Beverly was looking at the LED after she had already activated for about 10 minutes. And I said, okay, don't look directly at the LED, look a little bit off, because then your eye is more sensitive. When you think you see something, let me know. So I cranked up the LED, and my ray meter went already to 10,000 counts, and she said, I don't see anything. When she just barely thought she saw something, the ray meter was at 16,000 counts. So, and that was the LED shooting out, and then the reflected light being picked up by the detector. So now you can you get an idea how the light is coming out.
Yes.
I have a question. So on that curling device, have you actually taken a person, take the measurements, found the weak spots, and had a healer work on that person?
Yes, that's exactly what many people are using this device for. They're practitioners of any type of alternative complementary medicine, and they're looking at the person, the patient or client coming in before and after treatment. What we find is sometimes immediately after an energy intervention, the energy is a little more excited, but then 10 minutes later, if the person stays around, they look more balanced. So that there's a transient period of the body is adjusting to the treatment and then settling into a better pattern. And then they come in next time and they may look a little better. I have a student who's monitoring herself. She's going for acupuncture. She's a mind-body medicine doctoral student at Saybrook. And she's been looking at herself and saw already improvements after one acupuncture treatment, and now she's going sequentially and seeing how she is improving over time. from the treatments. So, you know, there's a case of a person monitoring themselves. So every possibility is there. This device is used by a lot of practitioners. That report that I showed you was the practitioner-patient report. There's another report for researchers that's totally quantitative that can be taken into a statistics program and, you know, statistics calculated to look at differences. So they've made it very versatile. It's perfect for the practitioner as well as for the researcher. And the devices cost about $1,300. The old GDV was over $10,000. So, I mean, it's incredibly different and yet better. And, you know, portable, you know, weighs 2 pounds.
Is this kind of a recommended time lag between doing readings?
You shouldn't take readings more than 20 minutes apart. Less than 20 minutes apart, because first of all, you're exposing the finger to about 5,000 volts, and for a short time, that changes the person's energy, even though it's a second of exposure. So it's good to have them sit around for 20 minutes. It's also important to be hydrated. If somebody is dehydrated or not fully hydrated, you know, they should get hydration from good water, even before a measurement is made, and they shouldn't come in and just after having eaten. It should be about 2 hours after having eaten. And that's probably true, good for any energy therapy too. You don't want to go in a full stomach. If they read your pulses and you're on a full stomach, they're going to see something different than 2 hours later. So there's some sensibility in how it should be done. But people are seeing progress of patients. They're seeing demonstrative results. People in Brazil are using this to look at spiritism and exorcism. It's incredible. There's so many researchers and practitioners in Brazil using these for that purpose. But across the board, for people doing acupuncture to any type of energy medicine in particular, they do see important changes in their clients.
Are they writing their own software?
No, the software is downloadable. And
saying those other things that besides what you displayed.
Yes, they have additional. You didn't see it all, but because this little computer screen doesn't even show it, it truncates what I can show you. But there's software for the Sputnik, there's software for the materials that would be tested, there's software for the real-time monitoring of the biofield through the wristband. And I just showed you the one program, which was the 10-finger emission calculated details. So the Russians will continue to provide great software. They're some of the best writers in software, and it's really amazing. It's really impressive to be able to see this level of detail in the biofield. Any other questions before we call it lunch period? If you're interested in any further information, my cards are on that little table. And I'll be around at least through Sunday night if any of you have questions. So, thank you.